Federal Reserve says no rise in interest rates. Everything is stable. All is well. Go back to your homes, watch television, and enjoy life. Don't forget to shop.
Adam Curry, John C. Dvorak.
It's September 23rd, 2009. Time again for your Gitmo Nation audio publication, episode 133.
This is No Agenda.
Live from the heart of the seat of the United Nations Gitmo headquarters, from the makeshift crackpot command center in the Big Apple, New York, I'm Adam Curry.
And as the sunset sets, as it were, here in northern Silicon Valley, I'm John C. Dvorak.
It's Crackpot and Buzzkill in the morning.
If you're in Gitmo Nation East, it is indeed in the morning. Very early in the morning.
Gitmo Nation East, you mean Europe?
Yeah. It's morning somewhere.
It's always morning somewhere.
Luckily, indeed. Hey, John, how are you?
Good. How's New York City?
Well, I'm glad you asked. First of all, I'm in one of those hotels that I hate. I really hate.
Okay.
And they've redone it. It's the W Hotel on Times Square. I'm leaving tomorrow, so I don't care if anyone hears.
The W on Times Square. Yeah. I've been to the W. Is that the first one? Because I can't remember which one. Yeah.
I think it is the original one.
The Waldorf. Yeah, that's the first one.
Not by the Waldorf.
I was there when they opened that place, and it was nice.
Well, it's a pain in the ass. So this is one of these boutique hotels,
which
I don't
Mr.
think is.
Curry.
I don't think it's really so boutique at all. It has, you know, it's 60 floors, and you know, so you roll up. It was I arrived late. What was it? Monday evening around 11:30. You know, so my ass is hurting from flying a transatlantic in coach. That was nice. And
what fun.
Yeah. Oh, there's my opening right there. So I roll up, and there's like, you know, two of these goons standing outside with the black outfits on, with the little secret service type IFB earpieces. And they just stand there looking at you. You know, not like jumping out to you know, even though I don't even want them to carry my bags, you know, please don't bother me with that. They just like, ooh. Ooh, and couldn't even say good evening. And then, and this hotel, you have to go in to the hotel. You have to go to the 7th floor lobby, which makes so much sense. The 7th floor lobby, and then you come out of the elevators, and it's like a club. It's like, and there's like, you know, really cool people all over the place. You can hardly.
I don't remember the lobby being on the 7th floor.
You know, maybe you're thinking of a different W. And yeah, then you check in, and it's just loud. It's just this loud music, and yeah, there's all kinds of cool people around. The lights are dimmed, and then you have to go. And then there's two elevator banks. If you're going to the 33rd floor, then you have to walk around the original elevator bank and get on there. If not, you have to go around and behind that elevator bank to another elevator bank until you finally get up to your room. Yeah, oh my God, John. It's just one of those rooms, you know, with the salad bowl sink and the groovy lighting. Well, they've changed it now. They've remodeled the rooms, and so you've got the salad bowl sink. But now, if you want to close the stopper, you have to reach around behind. They've drilled like a hole into the paneling, and there's a little ball in the most illogical place in the world. You have to pull up to open the stopper. It's just
my favorite thing about those stupid bathrooms with the salad bowl sink is the occasionally they offset the faucet. So if you come in, you have to rush in there to rinse your hands off. And as soon as you turn the faucet on, it hits the sink
and
curves up and splashes all over you.
Yeah. So they have done something. They have a little shelf, which is positioned like a third of the way above the salad bowl sink, and then has a lever on the side, which, you know, feels like it will snap off one of these days, and then the water comes out like a little waterfall. And of course, you can't figure out what's warm, you know, because this lever is kind of like a joystick, but with the stick is too long for joy. You know, so you can't, so you have to kind of like swivels around. It's stupid. It's just a stupid ass hotel. I hate this hotel.
All began in the 80s with the Morgan Hotel and then the Royalton and some of these other places.
Well, the Morgan was kind of cool in a way.
Yeah, it was very cool back in the 80s.
Yeah, exactly. When it was cool to be like that.
It was that's 29 years ago. But the thing is that you're talking about, they also, in these places, I know there must be a spreadsheet program or something, and it goes like this. Yeah, if you keep the hallways pitch black, then you'll save like $100,000 a year in electrical. I mean, there are some of these hotels where you need a flashlight.
Yeah, to find your room.
To find your room.
So now, add on top of that, there's a couple things going on in New York. So I'm here for Ad Week. Which, by the way, I reminder to myself, I got to be careful when I talk about sucking advertiser cock because they actually listen to the show. I got a lot of comments. A lot of people like, hey, what you here to suck some advertiser dick, Curry? It's like, all right. which is nice, though, because, you know, there, people are out there listening. I must have gotten 10 people come up to me and talk to me about that. So I'm in the middle of Times Square. Now, Times Square, by the way, has changed dramatically for those of you who haven't been in New York for a while. They have now closed off from, I think, 45th Street to almost 50th or 49th. It's now all pedestrian.
Yeah.
So where cars used to, there would be a split in the road and Broadway and, I guess, 7th or 8th? Broadway and 8th, I think, would kind of split and go around one Times Square. And
it was 7th, I think.
7th, you're right. And, you know, and that was kind of part of the fun, you know. It's like if you wanted to walk around Times Square, you had the potential danger of being run down by a speeding cab. It was kind of what Times Square was all about. So that's now all pedestrian. I must say, it's interesting because you know where TKTS, which is used to be this little dinky office right near the Army recruitment office on Times Square. For those of you who can recall from back in the day, with TKTS is where you stand in line. There'd be thousands of tourists standing in line to get theater tickets. Cheap tickets. That still exists, except now it's all like, you know, multi-window and on top of TKTS they've built this like bleachers. But it, I have to say, it's kind of cool looking bleachers. By the way, it's no longer Times Square. It's Father Duffy Square.
What?
Yes. There's
no.
Yes. Father something Duffy. And, you know, these bleachers, it says right there, it says Father Duffy Square. And there's a statue of, there's like a cross on Times Square, you know, dedicated to Father, I think Patrick. Not Patrick Duffy, that would be Bobby Ewing from Dallas. but
Patrick Duffy Square.
It is.
It's where Duffy was hit by a cab.
So Patrick, Father Duffy. Someone in the chat room, I'm sure, can look it up at noagendachat.com.
Well, you know, Times Square, of course, was named after the New York Times.
Right. Well, then it makes sense they changed that since no one reads it anymore. It's pretty much defunct. So it is kind of cool though. When you sit on the bleachers, I mean, it is amazing how we went from like, remember we had the Sony Jumbotron on one Times Square. I mean, the Times Square is basically one huge Jumbotron. I mean, you're surrounded by amazing video and light displays and, you know, I don't do drugs anymore, but I could just imagine sitting there totally baked and going like, dude. And they had like a nice opera on one of the screens last night with opera music flowing over Times Square. So it's, I can understand where that's, you know, kind of cool, but it really does mess up traffic. Because now you have to kind of go around that, and you have to at least go.
Yeah, because that's one of the thoroughfares. Broadway, in particular, was you could hot rod it up and down from downtown to uptown rather nicely. But now,
oh no,
where do you go?
No longer. And if you actually want to go anywhere in those streets, the cab has to let you off two blocks before.
And you can't go cross town through that area.
No, you can't. Now add to that.
I don't know what they're thinking.
But add to that, we have. Not only do we have Clinton's global initiative taking place this week, Ad Week,
we also have the United Nations, which means the president's in town, and along with every other world leader, it is a freaking mess.
Man, and Gaddafi's in town.
And Gaddafi.
Bunch of terrorists are in town. Yeah. Mukhajan.
Gaddafi.
Mukhajan. What is his name?
Muammar.
No, not Gaddafi.
Ahmadinejad.
Iran is in town.
Ahmadinejad. Yeah, but Gaddafi. Gaddafi's amazing. First of all, I got to give this guy props. He has balls the size of my head. This guy, he's like, I need a place for my tent. And so he wanted, you know, I don't know if you were following this, he wanted to pitch his tent in Central Park. And then there was talk about him, you know, they said, no, you can't do that. Anyway, so now he's near the Libyan embassy and he has his tent. His friggin' tent is there. It's pitched.
Yeah, apparently on Donald Trump's property.
Yeah, that's my understanding as well. But have you seen his security detail? This guy, he's got class, man. Besides the fact that he's a murderer.
Well, you know the funny thing about Gaddafi that's interesting if you want to look at it from a geopolitical perspective. We haven't heard much about this guy until they released that character up in Scotland who was the bomber from the
Not entirely true because his son, who was just as prick troublemaker living in Geneva, who was like beating people up and abusing people, and he was they threw his kid in jail, and Gaddafi said, you better give me my son back or I'm going to bankrupt your whole country. And they gave him back. The guy, he has
no, but I'm saying right now he's really playing it up a lot ever since
but
they
hear
got
me
the-
out let me finish my freaking thought.
Well, you can if you want.
His bodyguards, he has 50 hot-looking, I mean smoking hot-looking babes who are armed to the teeth in awesome, cute uniforms. I mean, like, completely styled.
Where's your camera?
Well, I have a picture for you from the New York Daily News. I haven't seen it in person. I've been sucking advertiser dick. Here's the, take a look at it. I mean, these babes are awesome. I mean, this guy, and he's got his whole outfit is, I'm sure Gucci makes it for him. And he's got his poncho wrap around, and he's got his little pillbox hat there. And he's got these babes, they've got, blue, kind of dark blue, camouflage outfits.
I like the one with the red hats. Red beret girls.
But look how cute they are, John.
A couple of them are dynamite. They look
smoking.
Like models.
They're smoking. They may not even be able to hold a weapon. But who cares? They look hot. And the guy gets on stage. I was watching the news. He talked for like 90 minutes. And, no one understands the bastard. So it's all being translated. I always wonder about those translations, by the way. How do we know that what's being translated is correct?
Unless you speak the language, you never do know. But I think it'd be fun. That's why Jon Stewart and these guys, they just do phony translations, which are just as good.
And probably better, yeah. So it's a complete mess. All the cab drivers are angry. They hate it.
That damn president is in town. This is just money in their pocket. What are they complaining about?
That's New York. They can't get around. They can't do anything. They just hate it. So everyone's kind of grumpy.
I wouldn't have gone.
Well, we have done some good business here.
No, okay. Well, then it's a good thing.
Which is why I put myself through this ordeal.
So anyway, other than that, how's New York? How's the weather? Is it muggy?
Actually, it's been very nice. It's been kind of soothing. End of the day today, it got a little bit muggy, but no, it's been all right. It's still New York. You love it to hate it. That's kind of the way
it's avoidable.
It goes.
It's a good place to avoid.
now, John. No, it's all right. It's all right. You can still. What I like about New York is everyone's in New York for one reason and one reason only. Unless you're a tourist, is to get shit done and take someone else's money. And it's clear, and everybody knows it. And then, and that's what I like about it. So, great place to visit.
So, there's something we've been remiss concerning this show, big time.
Uh-oh.
Show after show after show, we have been putting off reviewing the last restaurant we went to, and I believe you can't even remember the name of the place by now.
It was 5 on 50. It was the steak lounge.
Well, you got that part right.
It was 50 on 50 on 5th.
5A5.
See, I was pretty close. 5A5. All right, we can review that real quick if you want.
Well, I think we got to get out of the way. We promised, I mean, about 2 weeks ago, we're going to review it in the next show. And then nothing came of it. And then we forgot about it. I realized it as I was putting some clips together that we'd forgotten. And I had forgotten the name of the place myself. And I realized we probably don't even remember what we ate.
No. And there was some. No, I do remember. I do remember because it's. Well, the waitress was hot. Well, not really hot, but she was...
We forgot her name already. It was Wendy or...
All right. How relevant is it? Here's what I remember. First of all, nice ambiance. The place turns into a club, apparently, around 10 o'clock.
Yeah, this used to be the previously known as Frisson, and I guess it went through two changes, and now it's a steak lounge, as they call it. And my son rebuked me for even going to a place that would have such a trendy, bogus concept.
It's kind of like the supper club. But without the lame entertainment, at least the supper club in San Francisco. And, it was all right. You know, the seating was nice. The ambiance was nice. I like kind of the contemporary look and feel of it with, you know, walls of flames everywhere. Although it was kind of, you know, it reminded me a bit the inside of a luxury yacht.
Yeah. It had that kind of cheesy quality. Yeah. Now, I, thinking back on it, now didn't like it.
Well, let me, here, what started off, there's something we didn't, first of all, I remember the first waiter who sat us down, he looked at us with his head cocked, and I remember saying to you,
"Oh yeah, you bellyached like about that incessantly."
Yeah, I don't like the way.
I don't like people standing in front of me with their head cocked.
it was like a menacing look, and then he convinced us to have these shooters, and this was and it's not a shooter of alcohol; it was a shooter of gunk
flavor
shooters, and we opted for the caviar shooter. Which was $15 a shot, and if I could find 3 caviar eggs in there,
it wasn't worth it.
No, it was, and the gunk wouldn't come out of the shot glass, and so
it was terrible.
Like,
it was just a
bad idea, bad joke on us, haha. And I remember we both had meat.
Yes, you had the buffalo filet.
Oh, yeah, which was good. I did like it.
Which was good.
It wasn't stellar, but it was okay.
I questioned whether it was buffalo. Mm. And then I had the one of their, ooh, this is the best thing in the world, a filet mignon on the bone.
Yeah, you were not too happy about it, I don't think.
Well, and then I realized that what I was really disappointed in, it was served with supposedly a béarnaise sauce. Well, I didn't think about it at the time to grouse about it at the moment, so I wasn't sitting there complaining to you, but I thought about it, and then I thought about it later, was this wasn't a béarnaise sauce by any stretch of the imagination. If it was broken. A béarnaise sauce should be like a thick mayonnaise. It should be like a, you know, almost like a, just like, it's like a, it's, a, it's like a richer than rich hollandaise is what it amounts to, essentially, you know.
Kind of like snot.
Well, no, it's a little tastier. It's an egg, yolk, butter, some shallot juice, and some chervil and some other flavoring. And it wasn't. It was just runny. I mean, béarnaise is not supposed to be like, you know, whiskey. It's not supposed to be running all over the place. It was ridiculous. It stunk. And then they had, you know, then they had threw a couple pieces of tarragon on top of the whole thing, I guess, to accentuate the flavor.
Wait, there was something we liked. It was the fries. We kind of liked it. It was the truffle fries.
Okay.
Truffle fries that were okay. The meal overall, and
kind of greasy, by the way, but they were tasty.
Overall, I think it was overpriced. Because we had a bottle of wine to go with that. I think the bottle was, if I recall correctly, $39 or $49, which was on the lower end of the scale by our standards.
It was around $50, yeah.
Although, no, I a little bit on the lower end. We're probably somewhere around the $50 to $70 range, typically. Do you remember what it was?
I remember the wine. I don't remember the price.
Okay, what was the wine?
It was the Jason, which is like the second wine.
Yeah, it was okay.
call, yeah, and it was the 2005 Cabernet, which is quite tasty.
Yeah, it was good. And then, of course, the letdown at the end of the dinner was, excuse me, I really apologize.
But use that to start the show. Next time you complain about my using a fork improperly.
Yes, notice I didn't say anything to you when you again took your fork like a savage and jabbed it into your meat on the bone, holding it with your entire meaty fist. I didn't say anything about that.
No, you were too busy belching.
Yeah. They didn't have a cappuccino machine, which was kind of weird.
Oh, yeah, you complained bitterly about this.
I'm like, yeah, well, and our waitress, I think it was Wendy, she said, well, you know, I can only offer you regular coffee. And then one of the owners came over, or someone who said he was one of the owners, Steve, and I said, hey, you know, this place is all right, you know, except for your shooters were a jip. We actually told them they were a jip. And I said, what about the cappuccino machine? It's like, well, you know, it costs $3,000 and we really can't afford it right now. I was like, oh, wow. I felt kind of bad because they had just opened. They could
afford all those flat panels and all the art and all the rest of it. They could afford a cappuccino machine. And you can lease the machine.
And they had just done a soft launch, which I also hate. I hate soft launches. It's a Silicon Valley thing. It used to be a Silicon Alley thing, in fact. We're going to be soft launching the website, which means it's shit and full of bugs and doesn't fucking work. So we're going to just put it up there because we can't replicate our production environment from the live environment. So we're going to soft launch. That's what that means. And so they just soft launch. Anyway, it was expensive. It was, I think, close to $200.
Yeah, it's too high.
Yeah. I agree.
So anyway, that's our restaurant review, A5A. And which refers to, and they also have, it's one of these places that has all these trendy, bogus beefs, Wayzata. There's a bunch of these, you know, supposedly wonderful, you know, Kobe clones of some sort, you know, grown in the Montana hills and, you know, the beef are fed cognac and aperitifs and whatever.
Right.
And it's ridiculous.
Okay. So,
We're not going back.
The no agenda recommendation is don't go there. It's not worth it. And I wouldn't mind before our show is over giving a quick book review of the new Dan Brown novel, which I finished on the way. But let's do some clips, John, because you sent me a couple.
Yeah. Well, first of all, I might as well do the swine flu one so we can get back on track there.
Because every time I turn around, I got so many swine flu links. Let's go on that track for just a while.
Because every time I turn around, they're coming up with some new sales pitch.
Yeah.
It's a new sales pitch to scare people. Because I think these guys are up to their ears and people are rejecting it and the nurses this is going to cost somebody a bundle if they can't get people to take this shot because they've gone in.
Let alone your life if you actually take it, but that's secondary.
Well, the money is more important, obviously. So anyway, here's the latest sales pitch from the this is from a station in Monterey, Cal, or Salinas.
This is the heart patient clip?
The what?
Heart patients.
Okay, Mary, thank you.
Well, a study just out says the flu is more dangerous than you think, especially if you have chronic cardiac problems. Here's tonight's key to health. British researchers looked at 39 previous studies of patients and found strong and consistent links between the flu and heart attacks. Scientists say up to 50% of surprise flu deaths were due to heart disease. Health experts now saying it is critical for cardiac patients to be vaccinated for swine flu and regular flu.
This what a puker, by the way. That guy's a puker. Listen to him puke.
Okay, Mary, thank you.
The study just out says the flu is more dangerous.
Yeah, he's in a small market, so you run into a lot of that.
Well, there is a lot going on once again with swine flu, in the United Kingdom. I got a complaint on the email that, and it's kind of logical that, you know, since I'm in Gitmo Nation West so much that we miss a lot of what's going on in Europe. In the United Kingdom, the government has made a temporary change to the Mental Health Act, which now allows people who refuse flu vaccinations to be detained as insane. It's true. I'm quoting, the temporary changes to the Mental Health Act as laid out in an unusually short consultation lasting just one month. So that is, you know, it's like, that's kind of how they do laws in the UK, is like, they say, oh, we're going to change this law. And then they do a consultation, which means there's a website, and then you can say, oh, I don't like it. And then they ignore you and push the law through anyway. It would now only take one doctor rather than two to have a person sectioned and put on medication without their consent. The measures could have a serious effect on the thousands of patients with psychiatric issues who currently live outside state care, meaning they could just be detained against their own will on the word of just one health professional. And so this is now apparently going to be used for people who don't want to be vaccinated. You're insane, one doctor can say, and they can detain you and shoot you up anyway. Lovely.
That's a good one. We need more laws like that here.
Well, I've also don't worry, it's coming. Stand by. No problem whatsoever. They really must be desperate to sell some of this adjuvanted stuff, because now I'm seeing... hold on, let me find the link. This is good. This is a report out of Chicago. Gee, no wonder. It's from Chicago, the center of all things evil. As if we didn't have to worry about the H1N1 virus, now we have to worry about your dog. The H3N8 canine flu is spreading. We have to vaccinate our dogs now. This is just out of control. And you know it's the same crap in a with a different label.
Water.
Hey, you don't want to take it? Hey, you should give it to your dog. It's just nuts.
Yeah, it's nuts, all right. It's nutso. So I got this one here. Massachusetts bill will allow the police to break in and vaccinate without a warrant.
Cool. Will they have those stormtrooper outfits on like they have at the airport in Singapore?
No, I think it'd be like that Ellie Gonzalez. Remember that?
Oh, yeah. Where they went to go get the kid and they just bust
in?
Yeah,
and they're coming in with loaded to the gills with a big machine gun pointed at the kid's head.
Now, you laughed at me when I mentioned this a couple months ago, and I told you that there was something fishy about Verichip. This is the company that has one, if not the only, patent to chip human beings. And I was talking about, you know, the possibility of a RFID ink being used on people with this vaccination, etc. Now Reuters is reporting the following, and you might want to take a look at the stock, John, while you're at it, and you're in front of the computer, CHIP. I love the fact that their ticker symbol is... Chip. Vericorp Corporation shares tripled after the company said it had been granted an exclusive license to two patents which will help it to develop implantable virus detection systems in human beings. Oh, yeah. The patents held by Verichip can detect, I love this, the H1N1 and other viruses and biological threats. So, of course, we're now going to be marketed. Hey, you know what? If you want to keep your kids safe, just inject them with this chip. And the minute they contract a virus, then, you know, headquarters gets a little signal and we can save them.
You know, it seems to me as though your body tells you when you have a virus.
No, we need the chip. No, we need the chip. It's only to detect the virus. It really is.
Don't look over here.
Nothing to see here.
Ooh, look at that.
Well, you might be onto something with this company. I'll have to keep an eye on them.
Up 186% Monday's late afternoon trading.
You're kidding?
Yeah. Go look at the chart.
I'm looking now. Now you got my curiosity up, peaked.
And it's exactly the other. And this is actually the company they either partnered with or acquired, Receptors LLC, who do the biosensors. I told you this 3 months ago, and you scoffed at me. You did. You scoffed at me.
No, no, this is impossible. Let's see here. I never scoff. I'm not the scoffy. Holy crap.
So the you're looking at the chart. Stock it's like a rocket.
25 cents. There it goes up to 75 cents, 50 cents, 50 cents, 50 cents, 50 cents, 50 cents, 50 cents for 50 about cent, 50 cents, 6 50 months. Cents. Boom, $3.
Love
That's
it.
That's more than 100%. This thing rocketed.
Yeah. 186%. Hello.
Yeah, from an older close. That's from the plateau that went up. If you really
it's even up since Monday. Oh,
no. The insiders. You can see the trend here. It's flowing along at 50 cents or so, and then all of a sudden, at the beginning of September, it pops up in some weird way, and then kind of plateaus up a little bit, and then sticks there for a minute. Then it bounces up a little, and then it skyrockets.
Oh, so the insiders knew it. Yeah, the insiders knew it.
Somebody knew something. When you look at this thing, it's obvious.
All right, let's take a look. Well, we might as well do this, John. Who's on the board? Who's on the board of this thing?
Well, let's take a look.
Corporate governance. Wasn't this filled with Monsanto guys as well? I think it was.
Here's the key executives. The top guy is a guy named Scott Silverman. He's 44. He gets $1.45 million pay.
For a company that had a 50 that was, cent
right,
stock?
That was selling for 50 cents a share, so that tells you something. These are the guys who the officers, but they don't have their backgrounds on this particular sheet. If you go to the...
About Us. I'm looking at their website.
Yeah, it'll be on there.
The roots of VeriChip trace back to the events of September 11, 2001, when New York firemen were writing their badge ID numbers on their chests in case they were found injured or unconscious. Well, how gruesome is this? That's what they founded the company on? Someone said, hey, you know what? Those dead firemen, I got a good idea for a company. You bastards. You evil freaking bastards.
Yeah.
Working closely with Applied Sounds Digital like a Solutions, crock-up. Now Digital Angel Corporation, VeriChip was created as a wholly owned subsidiary in December 2001 to produce and market an implantable microchip to identify patients in an emergency situation. Oh, my God. This is the mark of the beast, John. This is it. This is them.
What I'm finding weird. And you're on their website, right?
Yeah.
Where's the board of directors?
Yeah, I was looking under investors.
Did you see under investors, press releases, SEC filings, corporate governance? Here it is, corporate governance.
Well, that's where I was looking. How about investors FAQ?
Here's the board. They don't have any background on any of these guys. It's weird.
Nah, they have no fingerprints either.
They have all these codes.
Well, really. 2-star, 1-3. Interesting.
Let me just grab one.
Okay, member of audit committee, member of compensation committee, member of nominating it.
You can always just take the cut and paste and put it in Google. Now we got. What's this?
I love it when we surf together. People sit in their car imagining the websites flowing before their very eyes. You're on the train. We're surfing for you. Don't worry. We'll have the answer soon. I got like the only guy who has a big blurb here is the CFO.
Well, look, you know, if one of these guys, maybe a coincidence, but it seems there's one of these guys is a patient advocate. And he is promoting, it seems to me, the legalization of marijuana.
Dude, great company.
These guys can't be all bad.
they can't really suck. All right.
It could be wrong, though. Anyway, we'll do some research and figure it out later. Let's go to another, unless we have some more swine flu news. I have a beautiful clip in the group there that is, let's do the Glenn Beck one first.
Algae?
No, the other one.
CBS?
Yeah. So I'm watching the CBS News with Katie Couric, and they tease and tease and tease the Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck, we got Glenn Beck. Katie Couric sits down with Glenn Beck. Glenn, blah, blah, blah.
And by the way, I picked up Time Magazine to read the article about him. Another jip. That's another $3 I'll never get back. What a stupid article. It's like useless information. Nothing in there at all.
Yeah, it's lame promotion. Well, so I listened to this thing. Now, you got to realize, I'm going to play the beginning of it, then you're going to hear the music, and then I just cut the interview out of this clip because it's just a dumb interview. It doesn't go anywhere.
Well, it's Katie Couric. What do you expect?
And it's Katie Couric. And so at the end of the – so the, when she wraps it up, you're going to hear the tease, and then the wrap-up you're going to hear, which, by the way, one of the other reasons I cut it out, the wrap-up – is 7.5 minutes later.
What do they have in the interim? Commercials?
No, it was a long, boring discussion of, you know, promoting Glenn Beck and what a nice guy he is. And so, you know, and she...
CBS is promoting that Glenn Beck is a nice guy.
Yeah.
I'm telling you, Fox is run by Democrats as well. People laugh at me.
Ready?
People
just
laugh at me.
Play this. Here, what you're going to hear is her promote. She's going to tease it. Then there's going to be a bunch of music. And then I cut all the rest of it out. And then you're going to hear the end of it. And at the end of it, you're going to know the reason why.
Okay, here we go.
Yes, Evening News. And coming up next tonight, he uses his big voice, he says, to speak for the little people. One-on-one with Glenn Beck.
Now,
on this, wrong. He's the most talked about talker around.
Stand up.
Glenn Beck's new book, Arguing with Idiots, is published by Simon & Schuster, which is owned by CBS. To see my complete conversation with Beck, you can watch my new web show. It's called At Katie Couric, and you can find it at cbsnews.com.
Oh,
and
my
coming
God.
Up next, he's one of the most powerful members.
So she plugs the book to death, then just kind of casually mentions that they own the book.
Oh, by the way, we own it.
And then she plugs her website so they can milk the thing even more on her website so all the Glenn Beck nuts can go over to Katie Couric's website.
Yeah. That's, you know, the only thing I really think Glenn Beck is right about is that this type of news is fringe media. And, you know, I bet you if you go to the office, and by the way, half the office is out with swine flu. Have you noticed that? Seriously.
Well, I'll tell you, Nick came in today and he had
did?
And he left.
Oh,
he looked like crap.
No,
he looked like you did
him.
When you were had
the so-called
swine
flu. Swine
you
flu.
Looked like crap. You looked like crap warmed over.
Yeah, and I talked to him on the phone. He's like, "Oh man, I can't keep anything down." I'm like, "Don't worry, you know, so I made a couple calls, you know, just make sure everything's running okay, and made some people do stuff, and said, dude, just stay home. You know, you'll be better by the end of the week." And of course, Nick, you know, he just got a promotion and everything. He's like, "I gotta come in," and he's swine flu. But half the office is literally out with swine flu.
So, well, that's kind of funny. I thought when you talked to him, because after he talked to you, he came in and he licked all the utensils and the cups and stuff in the closet.
No, but half the office is sick. But if you were to ask the rest of the people who are actually there, if they saw this interview with Katie Couric, they would say no, because no one's watching this shit anymore. No one's watching this dumb television, and no one's reading these dumb newspapers except the news media themselves. They're like turds twirling around in a pot, just going like, "Hey, look at that turd. Hey, look at that turd. Hey, that turd stinks more than this
circling
turd."
Circling the bowl, as it were.
Circling the bowl. In fact, and now the president, our lovely president, he said, I'm looking for, I know I saved the link somewhere. He says, you know, we really should consider bailing out newspapers. I'm like, what? What? Yeah, that's what we need to do. We need to have the government give the media money.
Didn't they do that in Holland?
Yeah, oh yeah. They did even one step better. They put, I think they put 60 journalists are now subsidized. So the journalists directly are somehow subsidized. Oh yeah, yeah. It's crazy. And do you think that's nuts? You and I have talked many times about the FDIC being pretty much a Ponzi scheme and non-existent, i.e. bankrupt. Now the FDIC is the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, and the dealio there is when your bank goes belly up. And they did up this. It was originally $100,000. Now I believe it's $250,000 worth of your deposits are guaranteed by the government. So the government says, don't worry about it. You're covered. We'll take the bank down. So this is from the New York Times. And I don't know if you caught this article, John. It's something we should definitely talk to our buddy about. But now there is talk of the FDIC borrowing money from banks in order to shore up their position.
Now the way this, now the way it works, as I understand it, is every single bank has to pay a certain amount of insurance money into the FDIC. So they're basically they're buying insurance, and it's mandated. They, you know, you can't get around it. Now, of course, the government actually be saving this money in a big cookie jar in case these banks go belly up. So they actually have the money, but they don't have it, you know, because we know we don't have trillions of dollars, so there is no money. Here it is. Senior regulators say they are seriously considering a plan to have the nation's healthy banks lend billions of dollars to rescue the insurance fund that protects bank depositors. That would enable the fund, which is rapidly running out of money because of a wave of bank failures, to continue to rescue the sickest banks. But isn't this our money that we already gave the banks in the first place?
Why didn't we give it to the FDIC instead of the banks?
So we gave money to the banks. Now the banks are going to, so they're getting that for no interest, free. And now they're going to take that money and going to make interest off of us by lending it back to us in case the smaller banks, which of course the big banks are totally in the business of putting out of business to acquire, now they're going to make money off of our money lending it back to us. This is crazy. It's fucking crazy.
Yeah.
I don't understand it.
Yeah, well, nobody does. That's the idea. I can tell you this much. Somewhere a lot of money hits the floor or the ground and it gets picked up by someone.
Well, here's another thing I don't understand, John. This is, and I keep seeing this on television. I keep seeing it being explained over and over again. And again, something I was scoffed at, not by you, but by other people, when I said, you know, that the Federal Reserve was going to be buying our treasury bills. And people are like, oh, you idiot. What are you? This is very normal. We buy the treasury bills. But apparently the Federal Reserve, which has the right to print money, our money, is buying more than half of the treasury bills. So isn't that like more turds spinning in the bowl?
That's how you stabilize the economy. And as you can tell, it's stabilized.
Oh, it's stable. Yeah, that's what they said today. The Federal Reserve did say, hey, economy's stable. Oh, okay. And did you see? I was watching CNBC. I'm taking a crap and I'm watching CNBC and they're all talking about it. You know, they've got the Octobox. They got eight guys in a box on the screen. And then all of a sudden they actually break into the newscast where a producer comes over going,
Federal Reserve says no rise in interest rates. Everything is stable. All is well. Go back to your homes, watch television, and enjoy life. Don't forget to shop.
That's a good voice.
Thank you. Let me mark that. I'm going to use that as the opening for the show. That was a good one. But I believe that is called monetizing our debt, and I believe that Bernanke said we would never do that, and of course he's a liar.
Well, you know, a foolish consistency, as Emerson once said, is the hobgoblin of small minds.
Right. Okay. Another person, you can go to the office and ask anyone who was Emerson. Let's see how many people know the answer to that one.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know what to tell you.
Okay.
Okay, you want to go to, I got one more clip, and then we're going to be done with clips.
Okay.
Then you can do your clips. Do you have any clips?
I'm
the clip meister.
You are. I've been working. You know what I've been doing here.
Yeah, you've been, as you say. So anyway, so I'm watching, so I figure I'm tuning on C-SPAN. So I'm on C-SPAN. It is 10 o'clock Eastern Time, live from the congressional floor. And we have two bonehead House of Representative guys from Ohio. And I believe that they were both drunk.
Cool.
And Tim Ryan is the one of them, and John Boccieri is the other one. And they were tag teaming, and Ryan would blather on about something for a while, and then Boccieri would pick it up, and then he'd refer back to the other guy. And then after they were done, it was an hour of them going back and forth and back and forth. That a Republican came up and just poo-pooed everything they said. But it was funny to listen to the guy who looks bored stiff, who's running the Congress at 10 at night. you know, slamming down the oven. I give the representative from Georgia 3 hours.
No, it didn't really say that, did it?
I swear to God, it was 3 hours. It may have been 3 hours, but it was like an hour or some ridiculous amount of time. It was, I have it on tape, but anyway, it's just like, you know, you normally it's like 5 minutes, 5 minutes during the regular thing, but it's like he's got an hour, you know, so he goes up there and yaks away. There's nobody in the place except these guys and these two drunks, or they seem to be. Let's say I'm not going to accuse them of being drunks. So I don't want to slam
them. It's all right. I will. They were sloshed.
I think that they were tired.
Okay. Extremely tired. And they needed to go to a spa.
So I picked up this little gem right in the middle of Tim Ryan's. These guys are promoting the cap and trade and how we got to save America because it's about jobs, jobs, jobs.
Oh! Jobs, 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 and jobs. Let's vote for jobs.
Yay! So now I have, I think, the greatest clip I've ever caught ever.
Is that your play setup?
Just play
what we're doing here with the Fold at General Motors, with the new battery storage, the hybrids. We drove in a car the other day, Congressman Inslee and Israel and I. Went from California to Washington, D.C. on algae. On algae. You know how you grow the algae? You pump a bunch of CO2 in it, and it grows the algae. So here you have an opportunity to learn how to make cars that run on algae, grow the algae in places like Ohio that... Unfortunately, or maybe fortunately, at some point, give off all this CO2, grow the algae, put it in cars, and we have a clean economy.
We're saved! We are completely saved! There is nothing wrong. All is well, ladies and gentlemen. Oh, yeah, you know what we do here on No Agenda.
Our formula is this. We go out, we hit people in the mouth.
And we drive from California to Washington, D.C. on algae.
I was, my jaw hit the floor.
Well, it is true, though. I mean, algae is a great source. It's like diesel fuel. You know, you can totally burn algae. I don't know about if you have to pump CO2 into it, but just that whole quote was like, the world is saved. Everything's fine. We're going to live.
Algae cars.
Algae. Algae.
And I like the thing you could grow. We could grow algae here in Ohio. Yeah, well, I think it's growing there already, buddy.
Let's grow. I'm growing it in my fish tank. I need more algae for my moped. Oh, my God.
What a couple of dingbats.
Yeah, it's just beautiful. Well, of course, we would never run for any type of office, so you got to give them some props for doing it. They're representing our country and the algae industry. I love it. Special interest. Hey, we should invest in algae. Is there any company we can invest in that makes algae?
No, there's nothing. I don't know what he's talking about, to be honest about it.
I've read that algae...
I don't know of any algae engines.
Yes, yeah. Sure there is.
Yeah, yeah, right.
Yeah, dude. Google it. Algae... is it A-L-G-A-E?
I don't know.
See, you're not doing the research. Algae biofuel successfully tested in clean green cyclone engine. In 2008, it's real.
Yeah,
it's real.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get any horsepower out of it.
I'm sure you don't get anything out of it. Probably stinks when it burns.
We told you on this show what NASA was up to, and of course here's.
Oh, by the way, this is a stock that's listed. This Cyclone Power Technologies. It's in the pinks. Really? CYPW for you investors out there who are looking for the algae engines.
It's a penny stock.
Yeah.
It's right up there with Orgone engines, I think. They'd run on Orgone.
Oh, how's your Orgone project coming, by the way?
I'm amassing research. It's going to be my post company project. So if I ever quit this damn company, then I'm going to just continue on my Orgone research. I have a shower, I think, that actually is a fine Orgone accumulator. My shower upstairs. Soon to be demolished loft.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think it actually is an accumulator of Orgone energy.
You should stand in it sometime, naked.
It could be. I mean, like I said, you know, if you mix different kinds of cloths, you get, or stick your finger in a Coke can, and I think, I don't know how many people have actually tried this. You, actually, your little finger will go in the hole. You'll feel how warm it gets.
Okay, that's the new opening quote of the show. Your little finger actually will go in the hole. Chauncey Dvorak, September 23rd, 2009.
I think your voice thing you did is better because of the shopping thing.
NASA says it has successfully launched a rocket in Virginia. I didn't know they had a launch pad in Virginia. Did you?
No, I never heard of such a thing.
Of course, Virginia, where all the spooks are. This is according to AP. We told you this 2 weeks ago on the show. Successfully launched a rocket in Virginia as part of an experiment, and the blast may have caused dozens of people to report seeing strange lights in the sky. The space agency said it launched the Black Brant 12 on Saturday evening to gather data on the highest clouds in the Earth's atmosphere. About the time of the launch, dozens of people in the Northeast started calling local television stations to report seeing strange lights. The calls came as far away as Boston, which is about 380 miles northeast of the launch site, and here it comes. The rocket is designed to create an artificial cloud. NASA hopes the experiment will provide information on the formation and properties of noctilucent clouds, which occur at high altitudes. This is that crappy, they're spraying shit in the atmosphere, oxide, to make clouds. And it can be seen as far away as Boston because this is a huge cloud they've created, and they shot it up from Spook Central, Virginia.
I don't like the sounds of this story.
Let me see. Space station. No, not space. Launch pad, Virginia. I didn't know they could launch rockets from Virginia.
Well, you know, maybe they have a secret pad somewhere. I mean, I don't think this was a big rocket. I think this was like one of those backyard rockets that just goes up real far.
Okay.
I mean, it wasn't like, a Russian rocket or anything. Rocket launcher.
I'll check this out. Spaceport. Oh, look. Dirt turned for new Virginia launch pad. U.S. Senator Barbara Mikulski told over 100 attending the new Midland.
Here from 2006, the Minotaur rocket makes sunrise launch from Virginia. Off the Wallops Islands. So they're not launching it from, downtown.
from downtown.
It's not coming out of the Norfolk place.
They've got some wires hooked up to a car battery. Like, launch! I used to love those. I had some model rockets I used to launch. I used to love that. That was cool. Anyway, I don't like it either.
It's the Virginia spaceport.
It's not a good idea. Silence.
Why are they doing it there? Was there some...
Well, that's a question.
It's a pretty fancy looking rig. This is not a small time operation. This has got the big, that big giant thing you put next to the rocket to hold it in place, that kind of thing.
Yeah, it's even the real deal.
They sent up a satellite, the GenSat 1 research craft.
Right,
this is 2006.
That's a serious pad. If you can launch a satellite into orbit, you got a serious rig. That's for sure.
They sent up TechSat 2. Future military satellites. This is a military launching thing. They're trying to keep it secret. They don't want people watching.
But it's not a NASA site. It's the spaceport, but it's not a NASA thing. And now they're making it look like NASA's doing it. It's the U.S. Naval Space Command that's doing this shit. This is not a research project. This is like, now that we're onto chemtrails, they're like, oh yeah, you think you know what chemtrails are? Take this, bitch. And they shoot that thing up there and float this huge oxide layer over us without asking, I might add. That's not okay. It's just not okay. I'm against that.
It's sketchy. I think we need to look into it more. What's the point? It's pointless. Well, that's all I got this week.
Oh, okay. Well, I got a couple other things.
I did watch it, by the way, for the Sunday show, I should mention. I do have some Obama clips off of Letterman. Obama is a laugh riot. He may be the funniest president ever.
I purposely have not looked at any of the clips yet. I was actually hoping you could have some clips for today's show.
Well, I couldn't. I didn't have time to get them together. But the fact of the matter is the guy's funny. But he'll be funny on Sunday, too.
You know, and I was actually considering that, you know, as hip as this president is, and that's the part that I actually like about him, because he is funny, he has a great demeanor, you know, he's very comfortable in front of the cameras, with or without teleprompter. He can tell a good joke, and he's snappy. But then, you know, you kind of got to expect for a guy who goes on every single frickin' show that's available on Sunday, goes on the Letterman show, you know, so don't you, don't people understand that, yeah, a guy like that is going to get heckled in Congress, you know, it's like, yeah, someone might yell out something. It's not, why does it have to be such a, ooh, someone said something about the president, someone interrupted him, someone heckled him. But in the meantime, he's doing all kinds of stuff that is unprecedented. I can't remember many other presidents going on Letterman.
No, actually, he's the first sitting president that's ever been on a TV talk show ever.
Yeah. So, you know, so there's a whole bunch of firsts. Does that not demean the office of the president? Does he not lower himself?
And he has to sit in that short chair, by the way, the short chair that the guests sit in, you know, and TV talk shows, if people out there don't know this, the guest chair is down about 2 to 3 inches below the host chair. And so there's always a balance of the host looking down and managing the show, but all everybody, the guests are down. They're down low. And so you had the president of the United States, who's a tall guy, because when the two of them stand next to each other,
huge.
Obama's 6'4", 6'5".
Yeah.
Letterman's not a short guy, but he's like still shorter than Obama.
Yeah.
So
the president was subservient to him.
Yeah, that's the way the those sets
that's
are
established.
That's how
the talk show system works, yeah. Over in Europe, we haven't talked about it much. The Lisbon Treaty, they're going to try it again. You remember that Ireland said no. And, of course, all of the member states of the European Union have to say yes. And I just want to remind folks, and we have talked about this for over a year ago. I read the Lisbon Treaty, which is a whole bunch of references to all these side letters, essentially. And just some of the basics are, if this thing is ratified, then European law goes into effect. There can be a European army. If you're deemed mentally insane or you have a contagious disease, like, let me think, what's a contagious disease that you might get? Oh, yeah, swine flu. You can be incarcerated against your will. They say, well, you have a right to life, except if you run away from police officers trying to arrest you and they shoot you, it will be deemed a legal kill. So there's all these like little tricks of the trade that are baked into this thing. And so Ireland said, Ireland said, no, we don't want that. No way. And then, of course, the European Union went, okay, well, that's no good. Let's have a do-over. We got to have another vote. This is no good. We need a yes vote. So that's coming up in October. It's coming up very soon. The yes camp, so, of course, is a huge lobby to get Ireland now to vote yes, is under huge attack as the funding for the promotion of yes has been astronomical. Ryanair, Intel, lobbyists, all under fire for campaigning with what they're calling obscene amounts of money. They are pouring on the heat.
But wait, hold on, stop. Why would Intel, or Ryanair for that matter, or any of these other companies care so much about what difference does it make to them?
Oh, because they've been promised all kinds of tax breaks. Ireland is a huge tax break company. So Michael O'Leary, the head of Ryanair.
Breaks. You think that's it? Tax breaks.
The head of Ryanair announced that the low-cost airline would spend 500,000 euros promoting a yes vote. Ryanair paid for a full-page advertisement in the biggest-selling Irish daily newspaper, advertising that proclaimed 1 million reasons to vote yes to Europe, 1 million free seats, vote yes to Europe. It's like a whole promotion there.
You're going to give away 1 million free seats?
No, bullshit. Read the fine print. Intel has, Apple produces computers over there. They're all over there for the tax break, so that's why. They all want tax breaks so that, you know, they don't give a shit if the Europeans kill each other or they shoot their citizens or arrest them unlawfully. They just want to make money. It's like, hey, yeah, vote yes. Yay!
Vote yes, we don't care. Vote yes, we don't care.
Your government, which wants to run healthcare for you. That was funny. I was out drinking with some of the advertising people, which is when you really do the business, by the way. And around 2 o'clock, they started talking about health care, and I excused myself. I said, hey, job.
2 o'clock in the afternoon?
In the morning. I'm like, would you look at the time? I got to go home. I'm like, I do not want to get into this because, you know, no one will ever work with me ever again if I get started.
Yep.
The wise decision. Yes. Cash for Clunkers program. Hey, it's fucked up. Guess what? Who would have imagined? It looks like there could be hundreds, if not thousands, of dealerships who essentially have footed the bill for, you know, the idea was if you buy a certain type of vehicle, which was, you know, more environmentally friendly, you brought in your quote clunker and you would get $4,500 off the price of your new vehicle. And so the dealers, you know, they had to basically sell the car, take the $4,500 off the sticker price or whatever the negotiated price was, fill out some forms, send the forms in, and they get their $4,500 back. Well, guess what? The response was so huge that the government actually had to bring people from the FAA in to process some of these forms because it was just, you know, they ran out of their $1 billion in like a week, and then they poured another $2 billion. They don't actually know how many of these $4,500 rebates or free money was given away, and it looks like thousands of dealerships are going to be stuck with tens or maybe even hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of rebates that the government's not going to pay for.
Does this surprise you?
Well, I just want everyone to hear it because this kind of shit is never reported on the real news.
No, the story's over. There's no reason to report this anymore. Moving along. Move ahead. Nothing to see here.
No, I'm not even going to play the jingle.
You should.
In the Netherlands, which is the beta test ground for all of Gitmo Nation, Home Affairs Minister Guusje ter Horst feels that it's necessary to introduce breathalyzer tests for pedestrians.
What?
Yeah. Breathalyzer tests for pedestrians in popular nightclub areas to cut down on alcohol-related crime and violence.
What, some guy walking down the street and they make you take a breathalyzer?
No, you walk out of the club and they'll make you take a breathalyzer. Well, yeah, I just came out of the club and I'm walking. Can you give me a freaking break? So, yeah.
Oh, I went to, you know, I went to Queen's Day, and everybody's drunk.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
So what is the point of these breathalyzer tests? Everybody's drunk, so what are you doing? What are you accomplishing? Can you give him a ticket for being publicly drunk in Amsterdam?
Yeah, yeah, in really? Amsterdam of all places, yeah. They'll give you a ticket. Huh. Yeah. Oh, yeah. No, it's crazy.
What does the ticket say?
You were drunk, pay us money. Yeah. Yeah, that's what it's about. You were drinking.
Is there going to be some sort of a limit, like a legal limit? I mean, with driving, you can have a certain amount of alcohol in your system, but once you go over the legal limit, then you can get arrested. Is there going to be the limit going to be the same as for driving?
Well, that's a very good point. I don't know. That's a good point. I'm sure there will be. There'll be some kind of, but it's like you're coming out of a club. They're going to stand like, you're coming out of the club. Did you have anything to drink? Yeah. That's why I was like in the club.
No, this sounds like this sounds like the basis for corruption to me. And the corruption in this case would be the club has to buy off the cops to keep people from standing out in front and take, you know, or the cops to try to extort money from the club. They have a bunch of them to go around some clay. You haven't coughed up your dole here. So we're going to have two cops out in front and everyone goes in and out is going to have a breathalyzer test. How do you like that?
Yeah, it could be that, but I think it's more just, you know, hey,
you think it's just stupidity.
No, I think it's just you, citizen. You're my slave. Shut up. I'm wearing a uniform, or shut up, or I'll breathalyze you. I mean, it's just more control over people. I do have a quick swine flu thing. I'd be amazed if you didn't blog this, particularly because the picture on this news story from this Dr. David Butler Jones. Looks kind of like he'd be related to you. That's kind of funny. He looks just like you, only with a little more hair. He's from Canada.
Hey.
Oh, no, I'm not being mean.
Yeah.
You might have heard about this. So they sent up these...
Send me a link.
Yeah, hold on. So they sent these swine flu kits up to the what's the word I'm looking for?
You talking about the Indian reservation? The body bags?
Yeah, the body bags. Yeah.
They sent them the other day. I know the Canadians are all bent out of shape about this.
Yeah, because they sent up these kits. You know, if you guys get swine flu,
this guy doesn't look
there,
anything like me.
He does.
I don't have a mustache, and I don't have that kind of a grimace.
I said he could be related to you. And look, he's standing in front of the fightflu.ca flag. That's kind of cool. Part of these kits, they sent out body bags. Hey, if you guys get swine flu, here's some body bags. Enjoy.
Yeah, good luck. Have fun.
and then apologizing for it. And also, was it that they didn't send up something that contained alcohol because they were afraid that they would drink it?
Oh yeah, the Indians, as soon as they see alcohol, they drink it.
Yeah, what was it that they didn't want to send up, like disinfectant or something, or mouthwash?
Yeah, they figure the Indians will drink it. I mean, as if the Indians can't just buy alcohol. It's not like if you're an Indian in Canada or in the United States up in these areas, you're an Indian. I mean, you're fine, but you have a driver's license. You can walk into a store and buy alcohol. But I guess the Canadians perceive these guys as such lushes.
I think that's the point.
That they'll drink anything.
Yeah.
Hey, don't send them any Listerine up there at that reservation. Crazy Indians will just drink it.
You want another $18 million website we haven't talked about yet?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, go to this one. Openinternet.gov. This is actually quite frightening. It's still in beta. Let me see if I can get this to play with our connection here, because the hotel connection isn't all that awesome.
Message from John C. Dvorak.
Thank you. Here it is.
Hi, I'm Julius Genachowski, Chairman of the Federal Communications Commission.
Hey, it's only one channel. Julius Genachowski. That's kind of lame.
Yeah, we can't.
But here's what's interesting. The FCC posts their first video on their openinternet.gov website, and it's left channel only. Hey, way to go, guys. Broadcasters?
Openinternet.gov. The internet is the most transformational communications breakthrough of our time. It has become essential to the fabric of the daily lives of Americans. The internet has been an extraordinary platform for innovation, economic growth, and opportunity. It has unleashed the potential of entrepreneurs
and launched the growth
of small businesses across America.
He's setting us up.
The key to the internet's success has been its openness.
All right. So this is the openinternet.gov. And if you look at read the speech, because I'm not going to play because he's the chairman, not going to play the whole speech for you. But this is about
neutrality.
Net neutrality. Thank you. And so he's going into this. The whole speech is about, you know, of course it should be net neutrality. Everyone, you know, you shouldn't be filtering any type of traffic. There should be no discrimination of what type of traffic is running through an ISP's lines. But of course, at every turn in the speech, he's saying, but of course, an ISP should have the right to manage their network. Because if they need to manage their network, it might have to, you know, like push some types of traffic down. I mean, this is a very, very dangerous outfit, the FCC. And now they're getting, and since when is the internet the FCC's domain? But they are now going to come in and they're going to create regulations, and these are the guys that are going to regulate the internet and going to essentially take it away from us. And this is their setup. And you should read through this speech at openinternet.gov. Read the speech, or if you're lazy, go ahead and just watch it on his one channel only YouTube video on his beta site. We're in beta, but we'll be launching more initiatives on the site soon. We're in beta. Here, the fifth principle of non-discrimination. The fifth principle is one of non-discrimination, stating that broadband providers cannot discriminate against particular internet content or applications. This means they cannot block or degrade lawful traffic over their networks or pick lawful traffic. Okay, so that means they're going to have to sniff it. I mean, it's all in here, right? You can just see what they're doing. Lawful traffic. What is lawful traffic? Okay, all traffic is lawful.
I think we should declare that the last 20 years was the golden age of porn.
It's all over. It's all over. That's right. They cannot disfavor an internet service just because it competes with a similar service. I'm looking for the... this principle will not prevent broadband providers from reasonably managing their networks. During periods of network congestion, for example, it may be appropriate for providers to ensure that very heavy users do not crowd out everyone else, like BitTorrent users. And this principle will not constrain efforts to ensure a safe, secure, and spam-free internet experience. I don't want a safe, secure, spam-free internet experience. I want porn. I want pop-ups. I want all kinds of viruses. That's what makes the internet cool. I don't want it to be safe. Is
you're
that too much
man.
To ask? No, you know what I mean. And I don't want this douchebag. Look at him. I don't want this douchebag to be determining what is safe.
Well, there's been some talk for a while about the FCC trying to get make it seem as if, you know, the FCC is always broadcast oriented. I mean, they have all the rules. That's why you can't have a costume malfunction on the Super Bowl and things like that. And the FCC will fine you, and they control this, and they license various channels and radio stations and TV stations. And there's always been a kind of a subtext, and it was a lot of it was done by some of the Republicans, actually, that maybe the FCC should be a little more involved in the internet, because you know what, you have videos on the internet, you have, and they also get more involved in cable TV, because cable TV was always on its own. It could do whatever it wanted. It could have the Playboy channel, it could have movies where people cussed.
Yes.
It could do all these things without worrying about the FCC fining them. You can't cuss on broadcast.
Right, exactly, John. So this show, where, and I've cussed quite a bit on this show, or I've said some words that would be deemed inappropriate by the FCC, will not be lawful traffic anymore. I mean, who the hell is this douchebag to tell anyone they can't listen to this show because the words coming out of my mouth translate into unlawful traffic? That's where we're headed. Dvorak.org/blog is filtered out already in every single library and high school in the country because of the word uncensored. You know, screw that. Hands off.
Yep. You've made your point. And I'm on your side on this one.
Okay. Well, on that note, we spent...
On that note, where else can people tune in to get this kind of charged debate, even though there was no debate there?
No, there's no debate. Wait a minute. Before we do that, hey, I just want to say I read this book, The Lost Symbol, Dan Brown's new novel. I finished it on the airplane. I like it. Let me just say why.
Hey,
you know what? And when Osama bin Laden puts it on his Osama's book list, then everyone's going to be talking about it, right? But let me talk about it first, before Osama puts it on his list. I like it for a number of reasons. One, Masonic history is interesting. It's one of those things, particularly all the symbolism in Washington, D.C. It's just interesting because most people know so little about their country, about the Capitol, certainly about architecture. I don't even know if this is taught anymore in schools. There's a little bit of history.
Even teach how to balance a checkbook in schools anymore.
So there's some history in here that I think people will just find interesting to read. The story itself, so it's another quest for this lost mysteries, the knowledge of the universe. And I'm not going to spoil the book by telling you the ending, but the ending actually does makes you go, huh. And it makes you think a little bit. It makes you think about religion from a different slant. And it actually, John, in a way, all relates back to Orgone and Wilhelm Reich's studies. There's some of that in there.
Well, I didn't see that coming.
No, I know. And the last 30 pages is just like, oh, okay. I kind of like how that ended up. And you sit there and you think, huh. That's very interesting. I'm not going to say anything else about that because I'd spoil the ending of the book. Not bad. Quick read. Definitely a page turner. It's a little bit too big in the hardbound version. It's too big. It's too big to carry around on
clunky.
The airplane. Yeah, it is clunky. So there you have it. I'll put it to you this way. Where else can you get a review about a restaurant you definitely don't want to eat at and a book you don't want to carry around? You can't get that on any other type of program but this one, my friends. This one.
Well, and also the algae car.
And the algae car.
Which goes from San Fran. Where do these go? Don't these congressmen have better things to do besides drive? Have you know what that kind of a drive is?
That's like a 6-day drive.
It's a ridiculous drive.
On algae. On algae, no less.
With three guys in the car farting? I mean, come on.
Anyway, I'm here in a hotel room in the middle of Times Square. It's we're going on 11 o'clock in the evening. We've kept to our schedule. We keep our promises because I'll be on an airplane tomorrow during our regular broadcast time. It's, you know, and it's important that that this show gets out on time. If we can't make it, we do it a day earlier instead of a day later. We're dedicated to this shit, and we don't play ads. So,
right, because we would be corrupted in a minute. So let's thank a few people that gave us some money over the last. And I have a couple of interesting anomalies this week. That one is like it just made me blink.
Okay.
So Spongberg Enterprises in Alberta gave us $50, and which we appreciate. Jeff Syke, S-I-E-K. I think it's Syke. It could be Seek. In Solvang gave us $51.15, which is a palindrome.
Yes.
Terry Love in London, England, gave us $81.87, which I'm sure means something.
Yeah, which means she only had to spend 10 quid.
Joshua Puchalski in Natick, Massachusetts, gave us $77.30, which he sent me an email.
That's a Masonic number.
Of some sort.
Yeah. What did he explain it?
He sent me a letter explaining it, and of course, now that I think about it, didn't make a note. I'm going to have to circle it.
Yeah, 7733 is a Masonic number. It's all over.
No, this is 7730.
Oh, 30.
And I think it's binary for something. It's one of those crazy computer gags.
Oh, okay, cool. Well, next time,
Joshua will
get the email.
Damn, no, I it's in there.
We're telling people to put it in the comment box, and you're forgetting to extract it.
Tony Bevins in Vicksburg, Mississippi. We finally got our Mississippi listener.
Hey, cool.
Isn't that interesting? Mm-hmm. $50. And then Mark Koulin, he's in the Netherlands. K-E-U-L-E-N, I think is the way I have it spelled.
Koulin.
W-I-J-D-E-N-E-S.
Spell it slower. W-I-D-J, what?
W-I-J.
W-I-J, yeah.
D-E-N-E-S.
Videns.
Videns?
N-E-S?
Yeah.
W-I-J-D, and then what?
E-N-E-S.
Yeah, Videns.
Okay.
You could have known that.
In Holland. He gave us $60, which I guess was 10 euros.
or just a sprinkling of gold. Just a sliver.
Or he sneezed
just a
in an envelope, and that's worth $60.
Yeah.
And then cordlesshead.com from North Las Vegas gave us $50.09, and the 9 cents was to remind me to say, Andrew says, Trisha, congratulations for winning an Emmy the other day.
Oh, wow. Excellent. Yeah, one of our board members won an Emmy, Ted Leonsis.
He did
a documentary.
He wanted
an Emmy for it. He was very proud.
Did he get the big Emmy or the little one?
No, he got. It's funny you say that because the first thing I said, "How big is that thing? Is it like heavy?" He said, "Dude, it's heavy. It's really huge."
Oh, he got the big one, probably.
Yeah, he got a big Emmy. Yeah.
Oh, good for him.
Yeah.
I assume that Trisha got the big one too because it was seemed like it. She should have.
Dude, you just mentioned her name. That is the definition of getting the big one.
Well, she'll probably be getting the big one tonight. So, Osama Alassari, mm-hmm. I hope I got that right, A-L-A-S-S-I-R-Y, Osama Alassari in Doha, Qatar.
Wow.
So we have a Middle East listener, that's good. And he gave us $64.32, which is $64 and half of $64.32. This is some sort of a mathematical thing going on there. Eric Payne in Lexington, Kentucky, which I think I talked about Lexington last time, $52.64. And Michael Gogos, G-O-G-O-S, in Tokyo, gave us $50. Now, right in the middle of the week, two contributions came in, bang, bang, one after the other. One from Stord, Norway, Stig Helga Westerheim, and one from Platte City, Missouri, Michael Kearns. And these came in within minutes of each other. And this is a classic example of random number theory. These two contributions came in from two different parts of the world at the exact same time. And I can show you the list of donations, $2, $5, $81, da, 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 boom, boom, these two, $69.69.
Huh.
Two in a row from different parts of the world right in the middle of the day, bang, bang, right after it, one after the other.
Bang, bang is appropriate with the 69 times four. Love it. Thank
Isn't
you
that
so much.
Interesting?
Yeah, I like that. Appreciate
but that
it.
Is, again, the random number theory at work. Anyway, I want to remind people to donate to the show. We do need your help, and we need it on a weekly basis. And that means going to Dvorak.org/NA or the NoAgendaShow.com websites and clicking on one of the icons that will...
Hey, and there's something messed up. I'm not quite sure how the NoAgendaShow.com website works, but when it picks up the show notes, it doesn't pick up the links for some reason.
I think that we have to talk to the web guy. I think he's just cutting and pasting from curry.com, which has the show notes with the links.
It seems like an RSS problem. I thought it was picking it up automatically through RSS. It's a Squarespace site, and I think that's a module that he put in there. So we have to check that, because we might have to ask the Squarespace folks to fix something.
Yeah, maybe. But anyway, go to noagendashow.com or dvorak.org/NA, and that'll take you to the contribution site. And we'd like to get some more of the $5. I mean, this is essentially, again, parking meter money, $5 a month.
I told you on Sunday, I took my daughter to the movies, $25, and that included, that was two tickets, two Cokes, and a popcorn. $25! For one movie.
Yeah, you got to wait cheap.
Yeah.
Seriously. I mean, some of these movies, it cost a fortune to get in and out of there, especially if you have a bigger family. Like, take four people. There's $100 gone.
And I do like the fact a lot of people are taking the $1 show. No, what was it? No, was it the $5 or $1? No, $1
show. $5 a month, which is 50 cents a show.
Right, no, 50 cents a show, and they started, so this is episode 133, and actually going back and giving us 50 cents for each previous episode, which is now somewhere around 60, 62 bucks, and I like that. That's highly appreciated. That's a very good way of looking at it, and a lot of these people actually go back and listen to all episodes.
That frightens me.
Yeah. I can't do that. I couldn't.
Because
I
don't understand. I mean, it may be, I think the information that we're providing here, we don't
kind of topical.
Normally do it. We don't do a lot of mea culpas because we don't make a lot of mistakes doing the show. The research we do is pretty obscure. The stuff we're looking at is obscure. I mean, like the algae guy, I mean, who else is watching C-SPAN 10 p.m. Guys yakking? You have to be kind of dedicated to do that. And so people out there don't have to. And we catch a lot of stuff. We miss a lot of stuff. Obviously, there's only so many things you can talk about. But the fact of the matter is, I think we dig up a lot of cool stuff that people can then, And the one thing I was noticing, and I think every once in a while I get some mail to this effect, is not so much that even what we're talking about is that entertaining or interesting or maybe even that, out of the blue, unordinary. But it at least it shows that when you watch, I think people would like, for example, the Katie Couric thing. I think a lot of people.
You should be
now
paid to watch the Katie Couric thing. It's just one big ad.
Well, what I'm saying is that I think people are, as they listen to us, are getting a clue about how to read between the lines and how to spot bogus information.
That is actually something. I think it was Einstein who said that when you
did he contribute this week? I didn't.
Hey, Einstein, you owe us some big money, dude. No, it was something to the effect of. When you read the black letters. When I read the white between the lines or something like that. I think it was an Einstein quote. I could be wrong. I'll have to look it up. But yeah, that's exactly what you have to do. And I think that if anything, we're helping our audience, our ever-expanding audience, to look through what the bullshit, the matrix of crap that is being thrown out over us from the fringe media, such as ABC News, and understand what's really going on. Like, can I wind up this week with a little bit of history, John, just for the folks who are interested?
Yeah, if you let me just throw one more out of the blue plug in there for good, for wild speculative thought. If anybody out there has been following the story about the hooker and the pimp and the acorn, which has been pretty much decimated by these guys, there's a very good article in the Washington Post, four-pager on the, online, that discusses their backgrounds and all kinds of interesting little tidbits of information, which doesn't detract from anything they did, but it does give you a little more insight into where they're coming from. It's quite very good reporting. Outstanding. I don't have the guy's name in front of me. Right. But I should plug him. He's a great writer.
And that's the Washington Post, you said?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're being sued. Acorn is suing them, by the way, for illegal recording.
Yeah, well, yeah. Good luck with that.
Yeah, exactly.
All Acorn is doing is they're going to turn these guys into not martyrs, but people who are going to be targeted with huge donations for a defense fund. It's going to just put them on the map.
Good. So a little bit of history just to wind it up for today. You may have seen on the fringe media station ABC News that it is very doubtful that AIG will actually pay back any, if all, of the $182 billion that came out of our pockets to bail them out. A lot of which, went straight to Goldman Sachs in payments for some of the business they were doing together. Do you know the history of AIG, John? Because this is what kind of surprised me when I did once,
but you can brief me.
Okay, so it was founded by a guy named Cornelius van der Star with double R, which is relevant, along with a guy named James B. Cummings in 1919. It was known as the American Asiatic Underwriters Insurance Company in Shanghai, China, financed by the Asian nation's opium trade. Now, in 1949, Mao Zedong brought the People's Liberation Army into Shanghai and, you know, said, you know, all right, you guys, you got to get out. So they moved it to New York City, and then they changed the name to AIG. So there's some history here, which goes all the way through his nephew, Cornelius van der Star's nephew. Who do you think his nephew was?
I don't remember.
Kenneth Starr.
Oh, Kenneth Starr. That's interesting.
The prosecutor who went after Clinton with tons and tons of investigations. So when you start to connect some of those dots, it gets very interesting. I'm working on it for you.
All right. Well, that will be interesting if anything comes of it.
Well, probably not. We'll probably be off on some tangent next week, but that's kind of what makes the show so much fun.
Well, yeah, but at least we got that restaurant review in, so I'm happy. Yeah.
And we didn't get breathalyzed when we left.
Right, but that could happen.
Hey, what were you guys doing in there, drinking? I'm really sorry, Asifar. I was drinking. Okay, so we'll do another show for you on Sunday. I'll be back in Gitmo Nation West. There's a registered letter waiting for me at the post office from the TJPA, the Trans
Bay Joint. Telling you to get out.
Joint. Yeah. Well, it'd be interesting because I don't own the property yet. So, but I'll be sure to read that on Sunday, let you know what's going on for the eminent domain removal of the minimum security containment cell. Coming to you from Gitmo Nation Mideast, the smack in the middle of it, really, Times Square, I'm Adam Curry.
And from the northern Silicon Valley confines of the dark nights that have fallen upon us, I'm John C. Dvorak.
How poetic. We'll talk to you again on Sunday right here on No Agenda.